You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
I don't think that the people listening to this, especially if you live in Florida, understand the amount of money that's about to pour into this state with legalized sports betting and everything that is about to happen as the floodgates have crashed open and these sports that have always been terribly unwilling to get near any of the Tim Donaghy or Pete Rose stuff are now realizing there's so much money in this game that Adam Silver was a leader on this and Roger Goodell a follower on this. But now all of that money's coming. And earlier this week, Mike Ryan, was it emotional for you, Mike, to see yourself on the first day of legalized sports betting? You've been doing this illegally across the decades. You were a child when you first dabbled in the immorality of illegal betting.
I was 18. Teenager applies. I wasn't a child, but so I was of legal age when I was doing something illegal.
You were a toddler. I smelled like embryonic fluid, and you were coming in here saying, I've got the Memphis Grizzlies +3.5 because I like their road splits.
Yeah. I remember when I was a wee toddler cheering on Billy Volek to get that backdoor cover for the Tennessee Titans. Earlier this week, sports betting became legalized in Florida, and it was actually legalized for a few weeks before then, but the Seminole Tribe of Florida didn't activate the app, and the app was activated just in time for Monday Night Football, and I'll never forget where I was.
For those who don't know, you had planned a whole weekend around what was supposed to be a seismic opening of sports gambling in which you went to the Hard Rock. You don't go that far north.
No. It was a miscalculation on my part. And look, I had a great time at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. I was by the pool the entire day watching Manny Diaz come up short yet again against North Carolina. But let's be real. I misplayed that hand. I wanted to be there for the activation of sports gambling, a physical sportsbook location, and table games. Missed it. Didn't happen. So I had a great time, but we were all left in a sort of limbo because sports gambling was legalized here in the state of Florida. But you had nowhere to actually bet it. And then Monday came along. And unannounced, very quietly, Hard Rock unveiled their app. No big announcement, but us in the streets, we knew.
How can this be done quietly?
That's what happens when you have exclusivity and no real competition in the state of Florida.
And all the money in the world.
Yeah, our partners at DraftKings would love to get into the state of Florida. Right now, the treaty states that they have to go directly to a negotiating table with the Seminole Tribe of Florida. So they're first to market. And when you don't have real competition, you can do things like, well, that's not really a deadline. There's no hard and fast date. We'll go when we're ready. The app announced, and a Mike Ryan that was steaming his pants was in his undies and got the alert on his phone that it was officially a go. and he put $50 on Tyreek Hill to score the first touchdown on Monday Night Football, and that catch, baby!
I thought that that was a euphemism, steaming his pants. I thought you were that excited about...
No, that's where I was. I'm painting a picture for you. I'll never forget where I was. And I wanted more pomp and circumstance. Yeah, I was 18 years old, sending Western Union to someone with the last name of Bone in the Philippines. By the way, wasn't really located in the Philippines. It is what it is, and I'm able to do this legally. I must say, I miss the dirty stuff.
Disappointing start. All of it seems quieter, and there is something to be said for feeling like you're doing something illegal, dangerous, dirty.
You didn't get pomp and circumstance, but if you could only have one, would you prefer more pomp or more circumstance?
Pomp.
I'm a pomp guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Put circumstance.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo.
So
wow, circumstance is so circumstantial.
No.
Yeah.
No, that's a misconception.
So is pomp.
Yeah.
Pomp. No. Very pomp.
No, no. Pomp is ever present.
Mm.
What is pomp? Put it on the poll at Lebatard Show. Pomp or circumstance. Pick one. But what I've not used pomp. I don't use pomp in any other space except with circumstances. I don't know that you can separate them.
Is pomp the root word of pompous?
I believe pomp is like a flair.
Yeah.
Like
I always
pictured Elton John when he arrives to the stage. Pomp.
Pomp.
I picture
is
Greg Cody. Like Greg Cody thinks he has a lot of pomp.
Pomp is not short for pompous. Greg Cody thinking that he has a lot of pomp is pompous. I think of pomp as a bit of a fireworks show.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, pomp. You know it when you see it. Chiefs offense prior to this season. Pomp.
Have you ever used pomp without circumstance? Put that on the poll as well, Guillermo, please, at Lebatard Show. Have you ever used pomp without circumstance?
No, those are two peas in a pod, Dan.
But it was deflating? It was not what you what wanted it to be?
Not
you
what I envisioned.
Steaming your pants. What were you steaming your pants for? So you're in your underwear. You're in boxers.
Yeah, I was in my underwear. Which was actually, I freeball it mostly now, so that was a bit of an upset.
Wow, okay. Yeah. Well, okay.
Yeah, I'm not freeballing right now, Jess. You don't have to look at me that way, but when I wear joggers...
I was not looking
at
you.
She was moving away from you.
I was doing like
the
blinking gif where I was like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, I have, I'm a big Bird Dogs guy, and they have the underwear lining inside the pant and or short. So if I'm wearing Bird Dogs, you know the nuts are just flapping.
That's nice, Mike.
But they're pretty secured, and it is kind of liberating, and it is certainly refreshing, especially in the South Florida heat. Don't look at me that way, guys. Like, you don't free ball? Look at this guy. I know this guy free balls.
I honestly don't.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You should. Tony, you should. Free ball?
Turn my mic on.
Yeah. No, oh, wait. Oh, yeah. You actually have a mic here. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, Dan.
I wasn't talking to you, and I don't care about your flapping balls.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there's a lot of feedback there in your microphone.
Yeah, no more.
Move that. What was... Go ahead.
How about now? Better?
A little bit.
Why is it that you insist on going to someone without a microphone only on flapping ball situations?
He has a microphone.
Well, Dano,
yeah.
I've got a microphone if you look in the Zoom right now.
Ah, damn it. Where's Bob?
Bob!
Bob! Go to Bob.
Kind of wanted to hear Tony's answer.
Free Bob.
Sliders.
Stop getting so close to your computer. I think that's some of the feedback. Yeah.
How about this? Is this better?
Yeah, same far away from the equipment.
Okay. I think that it's coming.
Oh,
it's a speaker.
It's a speaker.
It's a speaker.
Oh, wait. So you shouldn't be having it. All right, hang on.
This is a killer first appearance.
That should kill the speakers. All right, go for it.
Is this better?
Go for it.
Further.
Better? Go
further.
For it.
I like to wear sliders, and with sliders, I don't wear any underwear. But you know, it's just a personal preference.
Look at us.
Glad we waited.
Just two dudes free balling. Anyways, what I envisioned, Dan, was being at the Bora Bora Cabana. Toasting champagne that was comp because I'm such a big fat whale and I'm spilling money all over the place on UNC -7.5. It didn't happen.
Your 5-unit bet.
Notre
you
Dame
were going
covered.
In. It was a big 5-unit bet.
It was my only 5-unit bet of the college football season. Damn, Mac Brown. I wanted to be backing bets up at the craps table when all this happened in one pompous display. I think I'm using it right. But it didn't happen for me that way. Nope. Instead, you got the real shit. Me in my underwear steaming my pants. And I still, like I said, put a unit on Tyreek Hill to score first.
Did you like the app? Was it anything impressive? Can you take us through
now? Keep in mind, I have to mention, I would love to use the DraftKings Sportsbook app here in the state of Florida. But I can't because it's not legal here in the state of Florida yet. the times that I've been in those states, I always use that DraftKings Sportsbook app. And it's a seamless app. But here in Florida, being that I want to be a law-abiding citizen and not do this the shady way and get timely payouts in a legal and orderly fashion, unless I have to pay taxes on it. Anywho, I was impressed with the app. Now, there's a couple of things that diehard gamblers would notice right away. For example, wasn't happy with the soccer prices. Not competitive in the industry. I did think that if the Seminole Tribe went unchecked in the state of Florida, we were going to get taxed up the wazoo with bad, juicy prices. You know, instead of minus 110, you'd get minus 120 because screw you, we're the only team in town. Not the case. The prices were pretty good, but there were a couple of mistakes with adjusted lines. For example, I could have gotten the New York Giants at 11 at the same price I could have gotten them at 10.5. Why would I get them at 10.5? You know, little beta testing things. What I think DraftKings absolutely rocks at is a single game parlays. They have so many fun bets that I'm just filled with jealous rage that folks in the great state of Indiana can take part in. I would like some more of that here because I think DraftKings absolutely cornered the market on that. I want some of that action.
It's a totally different gambling experience to have craps, to have the energy of craps.
Yeah. I mean, Dan, you know the numbers on and data suggests that sportsbooks aren't necessarily a huge money maker in terms of what a casino rakes in. The sportsbook exists to get people into the tent. And then when they try to spill out of the tent, they'll drop a hundy on your slots or table games. And that's what this is all about. Just making it more of a destination here in Florida.
Don't the Chiefs have some terrible number against the spread the last 20 games because their lines are so fat and everyone's scared to bet against them? You're scared to bet against the Chiefs because you're always scared that Patrick Mahomes is going to go to Tyreek Hill for 75 yards and just start screwing with you. You'd rather have that on your side than be betting against
it. But it still looks good every week. You just see, I'm still at, they're not even that good this year. 4-4.
But I think they're like 3-18 or something ridiculous against the spread the last 21 games. I think it's terrible because everyone's afraid to bet against
them. You always want to take that offense. We were talking earlier in the week. If you have the Chiefs back into the playoffs as a 7 seed, they still might be the odds-on favorite because you have a proven commodity. You have the most faith in that team doing it in the end than anyone else. But even in victory, I kind of felt like all the things that we were saying about the Kansas City Chiefs got reinforced in that game. I don't feel any better about their prospects. Do you?
Well, how could you? It's all they are basically devouring the NFC East, and the only times they didn't look right against the Giants, but they looked right against the Eagles. That's the team where we were like, okay, that game, that explains what was wrong. It's not wrong anymore. It's just football. But it doesn't feel like it. Half a season in, it doesn't feel like it's just football. It feels like they are not what they've been, which has made me marvel yet again, right? Because even feasting on the NFC East, even with the benefit that the Patriots have had for 20 years of always playing against the AFC East, when I see Atlanta go from up 28-3 to disappearing, when I see Doug Peterson go from clocking the Patriots to get out of here, it makes me marvel at what the Patriots did for 20 years, that with Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, and Travis Kelce, and a defense that I thought last year had a bunch of game breakers on it, how hard it is to stay up there. It's just crazy.
If you're going to be a bad defense, you need to force turnovers at the very least. And they had ball hawks like Tyrann Mathieu, and Chris Jones just got healthy, so we'll see. I know they just
and
traded.
Frank Clark disrupts.
Yeah,
like they just
traded for Melvin Ingram, so maybe they realize, okay, we're just going to be bad, but hopefully we can get some game-changing turnovers. I do feel better about their prospects just because they're 4-4, and the AFC is so congested that if you rattle off a 2-game win streak, you'll feel all right about your chances. And if you're in that tournament with Pat Mahomes, why not?
What did Tyreek Hill pay on first touchdown scored?
It was plus 500, a unit on that. I cleared 300. How about that? Unit for me is 50. Unit for everybody else is going to be different.
I'm seeing here the Chiefs are 1-9, including Monday night. They're 1-9 now in their last 9 home games against the spread.
Last 10.
Yeah, it says 9 here. It's actually the reason I screwed up there is because this thing says 1-8 the last 9, but This was before Monday night, mental so math. I'm doing that.
He had
thing.
To add one.
I did the so 1 and 9, but then I continued reading and I said, yeah, 9 games.
Thank you, Chris, for adjusting to be
just
more accurate.
Trying to help, guys.
You may not be freeballing, but you just showed your ass.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Don Levitard.
Oh, I think Larry Fitzgerald's on the green right there.
Stugatz.
That's Alfonso Ribeiro.
How do you think that Larry Fitzgerald
and
is
the son.
Oh, the son.
To be fair.
Yeah, yeah.
To be fair.
All right, whatever. Oh.
Alfonso Ribeiro has a great ass.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
I have been waiting for someone to tackle this project for about 3 decades. I think I have this right, Stugatz, because there was something that could not be verified by anybody, a rumor surrounding Cal Ripken Jr. and how one of the longest streaks in the history of man of any kind, most memorable streaks we've ever seen.
I was getting ready to tackle it and someone beat me to the punch. Yes. I was so close. I've been talking about it, thinking about tackling this subject for a while.
But
now,
finally, yeah, someone has done the work to get to the bottom of what is called The Rumor. It's a Blue Wire podcast. The host and producer of it, Sam Dingman, is with us now. And I don't know where to start with this because I have a lot of questions. But the first place I'll start, thank you for joining us. How did you get this made? Because this is something that people have talked about for a long time, but nobody would dare approach it.
Yeah, well, it sounds like I stole Stugatz's project, so sorry about that. thank you guys so much for having us. It's a real honor to be talking to you guys. And honestly, the way we got it made is my co-host and co-producer, Mac Montandon. It's exactly the way we say it in the podcast. He goes to a birthday. We've both been Orioles fans for all three of those decades, and then some, that the rumor has been whispered about. One night, Mac goes to a birthday party, hears from a guy in typical rumor fashion who knows a guy who was on the Baltimore police force the night this all went down, and he says it's all totally true. So we do some preliminary checking. We get a couple of other reliable folks who agree with that sentiment. We realize that it's an opportunity to talk not just about whether or not this old flotsam from the pre-internet era may actually have legs, but also about what it means to reconsider your heroes decades on when the circumstances that you fell in love with them under have changed significantly. We were very fortunate to connect with the folks at Blue Wire who put us in touch with John Yales and Peter Moses, who have been our story Sherpas the whole way through. And here we are.
For the uninitiated, okay, this is the rumor. The rumor is, and I don't know how you can tackle this part of it legally, but the rumor is, Stugatz, what are the details that you have heard of this rumor? What do you know? What is the past as it regards the Cal Ripken streak that you know?
What about the streak itself? That there was...
about the rumor that kept the streak alive. Do you know what the rumor is?
I have no idea what the rumor is. Again, I said I was about to tackle this project. I never got to tackling the project. That's why we're having Sam on, so Sam can tell us what the rumor
you
was.
You are unbelievable.
You like that?
So you don't even know the rumor.
Got myself out of it.
No, you didn't. You failed.
Well, he's protecting himself from legal repercussions.
Costner, Ripken, a wife is involved, a cheating scandal, two friends, the extension of the streak.
Right, he called it up on the internet. Okay, so Sam,
you are useless.
I mean, just fundamentally useless.
I was about to tackle. I never got to it.
The rumor, the rumor is, and I don't know if you guys got to verification. I don't know how many episodes there are, but that the streak was kept alive. How, Sam?
Yes. So here is the rumor as it is commonly told. It's August 14th, 1997. The Orioles are in the heat of a pennant race, which is hard for a lot of people who have become baseball fans in the last few years to conceive of. But they're actually in the midst of a wire-to-wire, what would be a wire-to-wire first place run in 1997. They've got a game scheduled against the Seattle Mariners on August 14th, 1997. And just before the game, there's a mysterious power outage. Some lights above the Orioles dugout go out. And the game, there's a two-hour delay while they try to get the lights back on. It's very confusing for folks who are there at the ballpark, many of whom we've spoken to, because it looks more than bright enough to play. But the game ends up getting postponed. And almost immediately, this rumor starts to go around that this is what allegedly took place. Ripken is on his way to the ballpark, realizes he's forgotten something. Hilariously, in a lot of the tellings of the rumor, what he's forgotten is his glove, which does not seem like something Cal Ripken would forget.
Also doesn't seem like something that would be at home. It seems like something that would just be at his locker at all the time or on his hand, everything he does.
Right, exactly. He's probably driving with the glove on. But anyway, whatever the alleged reason, he turns around, he goes back home, he finds his wife Kelly and Kevin Costner in amorous entwine, shall we say? And
shall we say it? Let's say it together, Stugatz. In amorous
twine.
That was beautiful harmony.
Thank you.
The story goes, he and Costner allegedly get into some kind of physical altercation. Ripken is banged up, not catastrophically, but he realizes, I cannot play tonight. I can't play under these circumstances. So he calls the Orioles, allegedly says, you got to do something about this. Maybe suggests the power outage thing, or maybe they come up with it on their own. Somebody, according to several tellings we've heard, takes, quote, a set of hedge clippers, cuts the power to the lights at Oriole Park. That's what makes the lights go out. That's why there were not outages anywhere else in the area. By the next day, he's fine. They play a doubleheader. Supposedly, nobody's the wiser.
How much time did you guys spend investigating this? How many episodes are there? How thorough is the reporting? How close do you get to the truth?
We have been working on this for about a year. We have spoken to tons of sources, many of whom had never been heard of us before. At the moment, it's either going to be 5 or 6 episodes, depending on a couple of potential developments. And I will say, I'm not going to give anything away, but I do feel like we have reached a pretty provocative answer about the truth of what happened that night.
Did you get Costner or Ripken?
I will also say they have thus far declined our interview requests. We, of course, we have gone out to them through multiple avenues, also to Kelly, and we feel very strongly that it would not be the most complete story possible without their input. And so if they're watching / listening, we'd love to talk. We do have, there is some interesting backstory with the rumor, particularly in Costner's case, which is that he at one point went on Fox Sports Radio to do a very long interview about it with a couple guys named Chuck Booms and Kevin Kiley back in 2001. Spoke at length about the rumor. In a very mysterious plot twist, we actually tracked down what is apparently the only existing recording of that conversation, thought we had access to it, and then had that access revoked at the last minute. I'm not saying that was anything other than just what I've said, but it added to the soup of mystique that exists around this.
Well, what do you think happened there? You're not saying anything happened there, but what is your theory, or what is your best, what is your juiciest accusation if we were speaking totally hypothetically?
Speaking with complete hypothetical speculative energy, I think it's probably a situation where one of two things happened. Less cynically, it's probably just a simple situation where they realized it would probably piss off Kevin Costner to send it to us, and they didn't want to do that. More cynically, you know, it's a land grab in podcasting right now, and if you've got juicy audio that you didn't even realize you had until a couple podcasters came along asking for something that's been gathering dust in a CD jewel case for 25 years, maybe you think to yourself, wait a minute, we should do something with this. Hypothetically, again, speaking hypothetically, I would imagine it's one of those two things, but perhaps it contains even hotter goss than we imagine it might. I don't know.
Which one of the two do you like, Dan?
Well, I thought it was going to be you getting in here and saying, when I realized I was getting to the bottom of something close on this story, when I realized other people were on the trail, because I thought it was going to be you who ended up getting that sound because of the valuable podcast terrain that there is.
It's for sale, Sam.
And what would you tell us? What was in that conversation, Sam, for the people who do not know?
Well, so one of the interesting things about this is because we did not get access to that tape, we've heard that we have one clip that was played of it on Hannity and Combs, because after the interview aired, this is the type of territory you get into when you start investigating a story like this. So after the Costner interview aired, it became a bit of a story, and Hannity and Combs, Sean Hannity and Alan Combs, had Chuck Booms, one of the hosts of the Fox Sports radio show, on their TV show to talk to them about it. Like, what just happened? You repeated this rumor, and then all of a sudden you've got Kevin Costner on the phone for over an hour? What is this? And so as part of that, they played one of the clips from the Costner interview, and we were able to license that one clip through the old Fox News archives. But that's actually the only one that we've heard. Now, according to Chuck Booms, the interview was very damaging for Costner, because he called in to say, I've never even been to their house. There's no truth to any of this. But when they started to ask him a bunch of very basic sort of factual questions, like, if you supposedly don't know them very well, why have you been photographed at all these games with them? Why do you sometimes take ground balls at shortstop with Cal before Orioles games? Where were you on the night of August 14th, 1997? You're a figure of some note. Presumably there would be a record of this. He, again, all this is according to Chuck's recollection of the conversation, did not have answers for those questions. So it's one of those situations where Costner, or maybe Costner's people, I guess, get it in their mind that they should try to get out in front of this and end up fanning the flames instead.
Where are some of the places that the reporting took you that you found most interesting, illuminating, different, and allowed you to tell a more macro story? Because I'm assuming that you go into a project like this for a year, it's not just to get to the bottom of a silly rumor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, as I've already referenced, we talked to Chuck Booms, who, in addition to being a key part of the story, was just sort of an interesting figure in sort of the types of sports talk radio that were very popular at the time. And he told us all kinds of interesting stories about what it was like to talk about sports in an environment where it was harder to fact check things than it is now.
And I assume that they could be irresponsible in what it is that they were doing. And the only thing that gives it legs is Costner calling in. Otherwise, they can't actually talk about it that Costner helped keep the story alive by trying.
It was the glory days.
Trying to deny it. Yes. Stugatz loved those days when you could just say whatever you wanted and there was no social media consequence.
Yeah, if only we could go back to those days. So that was pretty fascinating. We end up going to one of the things we do in the show is we look up police reports from that we looked at a month, basically the night of the outage and a month leading up to it, to see if the police were summoned to what was then the Ripken property at that time. And we end up then going to visit the property. And, you know, one of the things that was interesting for Mac and I to discover as lifelong Cal Ripken fans is that this guy who was by repute the blue-collar superhero of the world lived in what was recently listed on Zillow as having 13 bathrooms and 2 four-car garages. It's so big you can't even see the house from the road. Now, obviously, a guy having a big house does not prove that anything untoward happened, but it is one of those important moments as a fan in realizing that there's the story that's built for you to consume, and then there's the reality of the life somebody lives. In a more concrete sense, we ended up actually getting a guided tour of the entire electrical system of Oriole Park at Camden Yards, including, this comes out a little bit later in the series, but we actually end up seeing the control panel that would have been used to initiate this fake power outage, if that is indeed what allegedly transpired. And that was pretty powerful for me from both an investigative standpoint, but also from a personal standpoint, because that control panel is in the back of the press box. And I used to sit at Orioles games with my dad in Section 43 at Oriole Park, which is just to the left of the press box. And I would stare, as much as I was watching the game, I wanted to be one of the guys in the press box. And so it was pretty powerful to me, this idea that this alleged incident would have been initiated in the room, like literally where the stories are made, leading, of course, to this story that we are now investigating. So it was a moment for me of realizing, like, I have moved to the other side of the veil, but at what cost?
Well, what were you trying to do, right? Because you guys are going on a journey, and it's 5 or 6 installments. It'll come out every Monday. And part of it is getting to the truth. But with these kinds of dedications, when you turn your life over to a project like this, you're trying to accomplish what? You're following the story, but what is the story that you were thinking about telling, and how was it different or not different than the one you tell?
Yeah. I mean, I think a big thing for both of us is this idea that for us growing up as fans, and I think for a lot of people, particularly, not that sports are only for, you know, cis hetero men, but as cis hetero men, sports and the Orioles in particular were kind of the way that we could access feelings. And it's what gave us language to talk about and express these big, overwhelming ideas that would otherwise have consumed us, and sometimes did probably consume us. And the not just the team, but the person, the figure at the center of that was Cal Ripken Jr. He was the closest thing in my life that has ever existed to a god embodied on this earth. And I have realized as I've gotten older in my life, you know, and my thought with myself was, I love this man. I love this man. And what I realized in the course of doing this project is I needed him. And need is different than love. And I would like to move away from need in my life and into a place of love. And I think it's been a very powerful process to realize if we don't need a particular mythology to buoy us and propagate us forward through our lives anymore, how can we move out of that into something more all-encompassing, which is love? And in order to do that, you have to look at something in a much more holistic and human way. And that's really, I think, what the project is about.
You won't tell us if the rumor's true, right? I have to ask you, but you won't tell us because you need the payoff in installments, correct?
That is an accurate diagnosis of my plan for this interview, yes.
You can ask me, Dan, if you want. I mean,
okay, yes.
It sounds like Stugatz knows.
Yeah, and yeah. I have the interview. I mean, the whole
okay,
thing.
Okay, you have the Kylie and Booms interview that you secured.
Stugatz, what's your Venmo? I'll send you the money right now.
I mean, now you're talking my language. I take Sal as well, Sam. All right. I mean,
what do you think happened? Because Stugatz always wants to believe in the worst in people. And so I want to believe that the streak was kept alive because, yes, Kevin Costner.
Funny that you're putting that on Stugatz while you're confirming that belief yourself.
If I had to guess here, Cal Ripken just had a gut feeling about something was going on with his wife back at the house, and he didn't turn around to get a mitt.
Okay, he went to get revenge.
Well, to see, you know, if hell what bent, he was feeling was true.
Yes, hell
you
know? Bent on justice. He returned home like John Wick to kick the holy hell out of a traitorous Kevin Costner. Yes, I believe that that's what's
true. And my investigation is not totally absolved Dennis Quaid. I will tell you that right now. Okay?
Quaid. It sounds like we need a 7th episode.
Randy Quaid has been absolved.
Yes.
He would not be allowed anywhere on the Ripken property. Dennis Quaid.
Yes. Half the Quaid clan is removed from blame. Although I have to say, you know, just since we're talking about this part of it, something that is very interesting that a lot of people who just hear the rumor don't totally clock at first is by the time this happened in 1997, Cal had already broken Gehrig's record. He was well past it. In fact, it was 1995, September 6, 1995, against the then California Angels that he broke the record, a game that I was at, and which was a night of total emotional transcendence for me. But it raises this really interesting question, I think, because, you know, if you're an Orioles fan, the idea that ego or a sense of personal ambition would have had anything to do with Cal's pursuit of this consecutive game streak didn't even enter your head. But there were people from outside Baltimore who thought to themselves, you know, like, he's lost a step at shortstop. They've moved him to third base. He's not really hitting the way he once did. He's already broken the record. Why is he still going out there every day? Like, what's the point of this? And if you're from Baltimore, you're like, well, it's because it's the right way to do things. And if you don't understand that, you know, then you, sir, are not a man. But doing a project like this with the benefit of hindsight, you're forced to actually contend with the idea like, well, what do we think this was really about? And isn't it sort of interesting to that he's aligned with Kevin Costner in this regard, who was sort of, as one writer puts it in the show, people thought of and perhaps still think of Kevin Costner as this kind of walking Americana figure, this guy who represents that sort of like honorable working man who has been through a lot and yet still persists. And that's what Ripken represented for a lot of people too. But, you know, Kevin Costner's this rich celebrity guy who has not put in the kind of blue collar hours that a lot of the folks whose image he's sort of performing in have. And so what do we make of the gap between those things, especially when the actual people who had to diagnose and resolve this power outage were those guys, and nobody's ever talked to them about what it was like to work behind the scenes at a baseball game. Nobody's ever, you know, asked them, was this hard? Did you have to deal with people asking you a bunch of insane questions, you know, when you're, you know, sweating your balls off at the top of a light standard in the late August, in the, you know, middle of August, trying to fix this thing? And so it brings up all these other questions that I think are much more relevant than the truth, which again, I do think we've found a pretty provocative answer to.
Sam, not gonna,
annoyingly vague.
Right. I'm not going to tell you how to do your job. Okay. You're clearly excellent at your job. I would just tell you, Sam, you might want to sniff around Kevin Bacon. I mean, it's a little sniff. Okay.
Yes. While you're getting to all your hoity-toity ideas about love and you realize that your fandom is a lie and your heroes are liars and cheat, sniff around Kevin Bacon, okay?
Okay.
Or David Caruso. Okay, you
got to be careful with Caruso.
Can we toss Tom Berenger in there while we're doing it?
Why not?
Steaming Lothario Tom Berenger, yeah. Making his way over to the Ripken house.
Someone to watch over who, Tom?
Rutger Hauer was knocking on the door.
Corbin Burnson.
Let's get them all in there.
Wait, Sam, if this is true, if indeed it's true, because you clearly care about it, right? Should the streak be intact? Should we get rid of it?
Oh, it's really? Over. An asterisk?
You want an asterisk?
Should we put an asterisk?
I'll start the show sports radio. I hate you.
No, let's just put Kevin Costner's ass on it. An asterisk.
I'm not going to count it, Sam.
It's an ass trick.
Yeah, right. Let's leave off the tourisque and really cut to what America wants to see.
Sam, thank you for being on with us. Oh, he wants to answer. Go ahead.
He's going
to
give away the entire podcast series to you.
Go ahead. He wants to answer. Go ahead.
Well, I would in response to that just say that, you know, regardless of where our story goes, I do think it is important to remember that Cal had already broken the record by the time this incident allegedly occurred. Whether or not we should reconsider why we're so attached to what we think the streak means, that I will leave maddeningly open-ended.
Well, I heard Wesley Snipes, too, just so that we can have some diversity here. I heard Wesley
Snipes. We were very clearly going for a certain thing.
Yeah. Glad you called us out.
Luke Diamond Phillips might have been there as well.
You were getting ready to tackle this as well. Huh?
And while we're at it, I don't know that Ellen wasn't there as well. All right, we'll see you later. Thank you, Sam. We'll talk to you.
Thank you, guys. Much appreciated.
See you, Sam.
Bye-bye.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.